DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Matthew Bunsen, who is a senior fellow of the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology and one of the United States' leading authorities on the papacy and the church. His books include The Encyclopedia of Catholic History, The Encyclopedia of Saints, Papal Wisdom, The Pope Encyclopedia, and most recently, the best-selling biography entitled Pope Francis. Dr. Bunsen serves on the faculty of the Catholic Distance University, where he teaches church history, and he serves as editor of Our Sunday Visitor's The Catholic Answer magazine. Dr. Bunsen has also served as a consultant for MSNBC, NBC News, CBS Radio, and the BBC. He's a regularly featured guest on Relevant Radio, Spirit Catholic Radio, Catholic Answers Live, and hosts the radio program FaithWorks for Redeemer Radio. With Dr. Matthew Bunsen, we begin a special episode of Inside the Pages. We examine interviews given by Pope Francis to America Magazine and La Repubblica. We now begin our discussion with Dr. Matthew Bunsen. Matthew, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, good morning, Chris. It's great to be with you.
We are having a special discussion going inside the reporting and the conversations that our Holy Father, Pope Francis, is having with various media sources. Can we say that it's a time of maybe transitional confusion? Translational confusion.
Yeah, well, first, a little bit of context. The interview itself was given to an Italian newspaper by the name of La Repubblica. Now, it is, in fairness, the largest of the Italian newspapers, the daily newspapers. It is, however, a very leftist publication. It is definitely of the socialist bent. Now, it is generally considered more moderate than some of the other ones, but that is important to remember. And its editor, Eugenio Scalfari, is a journalist, the editor for it. He was editor of L'Espresso many years ago. And in fact, he was also dabbled in Italian politics as a member of the Italian Chamber of Deputies. But he's also a very well-known atheist. Having said that, if anyone who reads this interview in La Repubblica appreciates immediately that, yes, he is an atheist, but he is really of the traditional sort of classical mode of atheism. What I mean by that is that they are not disrespectful of the church. And this, I think, is very important to understand as we move forward with Francis's conversation with him, because there is a tradition in Europe of having dialogue with them. And we'll talk more about that. For anyone who thinks that this is unheard of, we need to remember that Pope Benedict himself has dialogued and dialogued extensively with atheists over the years. So this isn't something unprecedented, but it's also something that I think Pope Francis sees as essential to do in the church's conversation. And that's a word we have to stress here, conversation with the modern world.
In the article that was La Repubblica, that hit a couple of areas that brought about concern. And I think we have to say once again, look at the translation before you jump to conclusions.
Yes, that's absolutely true. What we saw immediately is that when you read through the English translation of the original interview in La Repubblica, some of the lines in here were clearly head-scratching. I would note, for example, he references, there's a line about Christ and the Incarnation, where the version in La Repubblica says something to the effect that the Son of God became incarnate in the souls of men to instill the feeling of brotherhood. Well, if you read the actual Italian, that is not what that sentence says. And obviously that sentence is very, very poor theologically. What he's actually saying in that sentence, and I don't want to get into the whole thicket of this, but he's talking about the fact that the Son of God was incarnate in order to instill in the soul of men the feeling of brotherhood. So he's not declaring that, that Christ is incarnate in souls. That's just one example of what are many minor issues of translation. And I'm not saying that, that they're theologically minor. I mean how this was translated. Minor changes, as you know, Chris, can make significant alterations in what somebody's actually saying compared to what he supposedly is saying. So listeners have to be very careful in reading this interview and be aware that Laude Publica did not do the kind of due diligence, I think, in translating what are, even for a conversation, important theological points. And there are a lot of sites now. The Pathos blog, for example, has been posting through Elizabeth Scalia links to what are, I think, far more accurate translations. Not trying to spin what the Holy Father says as though we have to try to reinterpret what he's saying, but rather providing proper translations for what he actually did say.
Doesn't this beg the question, Matthew, where is the Vatican Press Office in all this? Why are these moments having to be addressed by just whether it's, as you mentioned, a blog site as opposed to the official offices, which are supposed to be the communication arms to the world of teachings and even just the conversations of the Holy Father?
Yeah, no, I understand exactly what you're saying. As you know, I'm a big supporter of the Vatican Press Office, Father Federico Lombardi, of Greg Burke, all of the folks who work so hard and who do such great work, the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. Mm-hmm. As we saw with the America interview, there is some frustration about how some of this was handled. The America interview was, even though, as far as I'm aware, the Vatican was certainly cognizant of the presence of this interview. And yet the folks at America Magazine released it to what one could describe as a very limited group of readers, including the New York Times and CNN. So you had almost maximum damage done in trying to spin what they think the Holy Father should have said rather than what the Holy Father actually did say. My suspicion is that we're seeing a kind of work in progress. And what I mean by that is that here was the Holy Father who, in the initial months of his pontificate, gave relatively few interviews. He himself said on the flight back and forth from World Youth Day that he doesn't like to give interviews. Well, that's a policy that was abruptly changed on the flight back from Brazil, in which he gave that rather remarkable 180-minute interview with reporters, where he was, again, sort of misinterpreted and misquoted on same-sex marriage, on homosexuality in the church, that now famous line about who am I to judge. That was then followed in short order by his interview with America Magazine. Now we have this. So the Holy Father, I think, has changed his mind in terms of how he's going to deal with social communications. This is a change for the Vatican. And the best analogy I can give is just a day or so after his election, the Sunday after, when the new Pope Francis said Mass at the Santa Anna in Vaticano, the church in the Vatican City State, and then immediately wandered out into the crowd. And you could see, and this has been true for the poor Vatican security people since, a bit of a nightmare. And they had to adjust accordingly to the style of this pope. And we saw the tension that existed in trying to keep him safe in Brazil. The Holy Father is the one who makes the decision, however, as to what he wants to do regarding his own security. Now, he's respectful of his security people, but he wants to be on the ground with people. We saw that in Brazil, as I was saying, in Rio, when he walked into the crowd in the slum. I would say that the Vatican press establishment is in a similar position right now. They, I think, are trying to adjust to the style of this pontificate, and we'll have to see if over the next weeks there isn't an adjustment made for them to be able to work with the Holy Father, to be faithful to what he needs, but then also to help make certain that the resources are there for clarifications when he is misinterpreted and when things like this happen.
I don't think anybody would want to prevent the Holy Father from responding to the movement of the Holy Spirit and speaking to the world and addressing those various issues that he feels called to. I think we all agree that that is a vital aspect of his leadership. It becomes problematic when, because of the translation issues, there is almost a desire for, and I cannot think of another word for it, but it is what it is, to take bad translations and propagandize those things.
Yeah. And that's something that I think the Vatican press office, I think that the Vatican communications establishment, and we'll talk more about that in a second. The Holy Father's discussion in America Magazine got wide play. His use of the phrase cultura dello scarto, this disposable culture, his discussion of abortion got almost no play. And this is nothing new. The way that the press has treated him, this pope, any pope, is almost tiresomely predictable. What I think we'll see is exactly that the Vatican press establishment is going to begin making adjustments accordingly, in part because I think they have to. This is the style of this pontificate, and you adjust accordingly. Pope John Paul II traveled the world as a pilgrim. He was seen in person by over a billion people. His style was his own. Benedict had his own style, and the Vatican press people adjusted accordingly. We're going to see the same thing, I think, with Francis. It's easy to forget that he's only been pope for about 6 months. And as I was saying, his forays into this kind of media are themselves brand new. This has been barely a month or so of this kind of outreach to the press. So we have to be patient while this new way of communicating take shape. Now, can it be frustrating? Absolutely. I mean, you and I are both in media, and you and I talk to a lot of other people who are in media.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been a certain palpable frustration over the last couple of weeks with how some of these rollouts have been handled. But what Francis says in these interviews is important. Both the America interview and this interview reveal fascinating things and important things that Francis is trying to communicate to the modern world. Look beyond, for example, even the hot button things that he talked about in America. That was a 12,000 word interview. And all we've talked about for the most part would be about 100 to 200 words of a 12,000 word interview. His interview with La Repubblica, we have a couple of sentences that were very poorly translated, so now everyone's up in arms. But there are two things that we can focus on. One is, think of the details of Francis's own personality and his own pontificate. He talks, for example, of the fact that after he was elected, he left the Sistine Chapel and prayed to whether or not he should accept election. That is a fascinating detail that we would not otherwise know were he not giving these conversations. But the other is exactly that. This was a conversation with an atheist. Benedict XVI, I know, talked to Oriana Fallaci and a lot of the other classically trained atheists in Europe. The only difference was that those conversations were not published. We don't know what a lot of those conversations were like in private. These happen to be public. But when you read through this interview, he really boxes in Scalfari on a number of occasions and forces him to look from a perspective that he would otherwise not necessarily always encounter. Francis, for example, does not allow him to hide behind this the classic wall of René Descartes and his discourse on method. But I think, therefore, I am, as though that suddenly allows you to dispense with all religious belief. And Francis tells him, Descartes never denied faith in a transcendent God. And he then boxes him again later, where he talks about the fact that, I mean, he can pretend that he doesn't have a soul. He says, you do not believe in a soul, but you have one. And that's really interesting stuff. And Scalfari at times is at some that any atheist is to deal with what Francis is telling him. So it's worth Francis, and in Francis's view, it's worth doing this. Is there danger of being misquoted, being misinterpreted, having things taken out of context? Yes. But think of the people who are struggling with belief, who are gravitating toward the false enticements of atheism and cynicism, who will read this and see before them somebody to talk to them, but who's also clearly as smart, if not smarter, than somebody like Eugenio Scalfari, and who certainly is significantly more interesting, inviting, and smarter, not to mention rational, than the supposed heralds of rationalism like Richard Dawkins.
What I find fascinating in this, Matthew, is to go back to the reaction of so many who have felt they have walked so closely with the Holy Father, whether it be with Pope John Paul, whether it was Benedict XVI, and even with Francis, that there amongst those is this anxious tension of, can I really trust him? What's happening here? He's saying this. And that's right. What I'd like to address too, because it's as though it's peace be still, folks. Do you know where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I do. There are two aspects. And believe me, I completely understand where a lot of people are coming from. We live in an age of such radical uncertainty, of almost chronic perpetual betrayal by politicians that we think are going to stand and do the right thing. In some cases, we've been let down by what we would see as the leaders in the church in a sex abuse crisis. We're almost conditioned now to expect disappointment. When we go back to the conclave, there was so much excitement about the prospect of the next pope. I was grief-stricken at the resignation of Pope Benedict. Mm-hmm. I understood why he resigned. And looking back on it now, we understand this. I don't judge popes. I don't tell popes what to do. If the pope wants to resign, that's his right. But I also had a certain trust and confidence and hope that Benedict knew what he was doing. And that the Holy Spirit would be there. And think of the excitement on the night of the very night of the election, March 13th. There was the excitement around the world was incredible to watch. And we got something that was completely unexpected, something that was very different. Mm-hmm. And we need to recapture that sense of trust, of hope, of understanding that the Holy Spirit knows what he's about. And we need to have that trust. We need to have that confidence in the faith and not to be driven by fear. That is what, to borrow the phrase that Pope Francis likes to use, the evil one. fills us with fear, with doubt, with an inability to trust. And that's worth remembering, I think, especially in situations like this, where we have to think less with our hearts in the sense of being filled with fear and trepidation, and more with that companion of reason, of understanding, here is what we're being told he's saying. Well, if that doesn't sound right, don't immediately panic and assume the worst, but dig a little deeper. See what he's actually saying. Is this translation right? Do our own due diligence as Catholics. Mm-hmm. Deepen our faith and get out there and talk about this. Help people who are misinformed about it to see it properly and to have then that reason. And once you understand that fully, then your heart can understand too. Oh, I understand. I don't have to be afraid.
I think that's precisely the key. I think he's modeling for us in a very incredible way, Matthew, what the church had desired in its reflections in the Synod on the New Evangelization. The church needs to become a listening church.
Yes.
And that is precisely what he did in that interview. He listened to whom he was in dialogue with, and he responded back and forth and back and forth. And he allowed the world to listen in on that conversation.
Yes, that's exactly it. Look at the respect that he pays to Eugenio Scalfari. Scalfari tells, it's a great little segment in here where he talks about that the Pope is looking at his schedule and asks him, you know, what day is best for you? You know, the Pope is asking this editor, what's good for you? And then when he brings him into the room at the Domus, he goes and gets him water and offers him coffee. Now, that's his style, it's his personality, but it also demonstrates that he respects this person. You know, it's easy for us who believe, who love the faith, who love God, to look at an atheist with a mixture of contempt and a certain amount of aggravation, that it's inconceivable that you could embrace atheism.
Especially one who's involved in the media.
Well, yeah, exactly. But showing that contempt, giving into a dismissive attitude that if you're an atheist, you must be an idiot, is not going to help bring somebody who is struggling with faith, with belief. You know, an atheist is somebody who is struggling to deal with what is true, what is real. You know, I always use the analogy that you can jump off a cliff screaming your head off that gravity doesn't exist. But when you hit the bottom, you're made quite aware of the reality of that. Well, atheism, of course, and this is another whole conversation, but I mean, atheism lives in this permanent state of denial. And you have to help people, and Francis is telling us that we have to help these people to appreciate fully what is true, what is real, and what is in front of us. But you're not going to do that by dismissing them, by treating them with contempt, by telling them that they're idiots, by telling them that they're sinners and wrong. And all of the shocking lack of courtesy that we see in so many other parts of culture, we have to have charity and love in our hearts and be willing to dialogue, to be willing to listen. And that's where fear comes in. You know, there's always this fear that you see sometimes of not wanting to dialogue with atheists, with fundamentalists, you know, with these others, because you're thinking they're not going to listen to me anyway. But there's also a lack of confidence that, am I up to dialogue with them? Can I win this argument? Well, if you know the faith, if you love the faith, if you live the faith, and you have the confidence in the faith, and you trust in the faith, you don't have to be afraid of these kinds of encounters. Francis is telling us we don't have to be afraid of these encounters. Because if we live authentically, that's also going to shine through. And how many souls are going to be touched by this interview, by the America interview, by what Francis is doing, who would otherwise not be willing even to listen to what the church has to offer because of what they've been told the church believes? Francis is showing them what the church actually believes, and he's living it in the world.
I would imagine we'll have discussions in the future on other events and moments that come up. I don't doubt this is the beginning of an exciting time and can we say an era in the church?
I think so. If Pope Francis continues to give interviews left and right, mm-hmm. I think you and I are going to be very busy. And for me, it's a privilege to be able to talk about Pope Francis. And I look forward to continuing to talk about Pope Francis, especially to people who are touched by his words. And it's an opportunity, as Pope Francis has also said, to build up the unity in the church. And sometimes being Catholic, being a Christian, comes with high demands. But that's part of why we love the faith.
Absolutely. Dr. Matthew Bunsen, thank you very much.
I hope that was helpful, Chris. Love talking with you. Take care and God bless.
You've been listening to Dr. Matthew Bunsen. To learn more about Dr. Bunsen's book, Pope Francis, as well as the Catholic Answer magazine, go to osv.com, the website for his publisher, Our Sunday Visitor. To hear and or to download this episode along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a discerninghearts.com production. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.